Accession number 31414, reel 1.
Okay, so we're off. Can you tell me when and where you were born?
I was born in a place called Koumea, that is south of Lviv, and in the country which is now Ukraine. Then it was called Little Poland, southeast Poland at the time. And I was born on the 1st of January 1913. And of course, most of the time, all the time as a youngster, I spent in this place Koumea when I had my education. And of course, later on, I worked as an officer, actually, with the Polish Armed Forces in Koumea itself.
Before we go that far, what kind of social milieu were you born into? My
father was in charge of the prison, actually. He was a prison officer in charge in Koumea. And of course, most of the prisoners were Hutus, because you have to sort of remember that percentage of Polish people in that part of the country was only 13%. The rest were the Ukrainian and the Hutus, mostly Hutus.
Speaking Polish or?
Oh, they spoke Polish, not much really. They preferred that. Their language was slightly different to Ukrainian language. It was a mixture even with the Hungarian, because of course they lived close to the Hungarian border. But these were very cultural people. They were born cultural in them. And it was very, very nice. My wife, she was my fiancée then, she worked in the civil administration in Kosów-Huzulsk. And she had a lot of contact with the people, especially with the Hutus.
Do you have any? Did the Great War impact? I mean, you were a small child during that period from 1914 to 20. Did it impact?
The First War?
The Great War. Yeah.
Yes, we had moved. Actually, I was then probably 3 years of age. Well, war started in 1914. I was about 3 years of age. In 17, we were moved to Austria, because that was Galicia then called, Austrian sort of part of the world. And my father, he was a soldier with the Austrian army, and fought in the Italy, North Italian mountains there. And there was a danger that the Russians would come along, and therefore we were evacuated to southern Austria, Tyrol. And we spent there 2 years, I think, and then we moved back to Koumea again. And that was my experience, probably a bit more than that, because that was the town where the forces changed. One day we had the Austrian, the next day we had the Romanian forces, and the other day then the Polish came along. And I remember the number of regiment was number 49 regiment, which I served later on in too. So then of course it established itself quite quietly. We had no problem. And of course I grew up and went to school, primary school, and then the gymnasium, we used to call it.
So this would have been in now, say we're in the, you're born in 1913, so it'd be 1923. In the late 20s, you were at school.
That's right. And
this was a period of relative stability there.
Yeah. And of course, as a youngster, I was very much involved in sport. I used to play soccer. I used to represent our county, actually, which was called Stanislavov then, then it's changed the name, as you especially winter time, a lot of skiing. I was ski instructor, in fact.
In the which mount in the mountains?
In the mountains. That's the reason, because there were the mountains which were a suitable place to be trained for skiing, and the place I used to go to do the skiing, it was called Vorochta. I don't know whether you met. There are several places: Jaremče, Vorochta, Voronienka. The Latin very close actually. And Nadvurna.
I don't remember those places. I mean, when
these
I was
are the
there,
places.
I was there in the summer, but I mean, where did the tourists come? Were they Austrian tourists, or who came to ski there?
Well, the tourists usually were Polish people from Poland itself. They used to come, and especially Vorochta was the place that they used to.
But this was still Poland, wasn't it? It was still Poland.
Yes,
your area then. This was before Poland was cut back. I mean, this area is now Western Ukraine. But then, in the 30s, it was still Poland.
Yeah, it was Polish.
Lviv
the war started in 39. That was the Polish territory. Polish, there's no question about that. Not fair, really, to speak truth. It was not a Polish. It was something that Poland captured during the old history times, since actually the history, Polish history, began
the 13th century.
And
really,
that was King Mieszko I, and then his son. They captured it up to the Black Sea.
In the 13th century?
Yes,
I think.
Up to the Black Sea, they've captured the territory and kept it. And then you probably remember the siege of Lviv. The Ukrainian in war number one, during the war number one, the end war number, they tried to get Wolf back, and that was a terrific fight there, and especially the students, young people fought. So therefore there is a cemetery there in Wolf, Orlund, Erlenta, Eagles.
I've been there. I've been to that.
You've been there.
Yes,
been it.
That's right. Beautiful.
It's very kept very well now. Yes.
Well, when I was there, it was very dilapidated, but it had a very strong atmosphere. And there's, of course, the monument to Adam Mickiewicz.
Mickiewicz,
the Polish national poet. It's a fascinating, a beautiful, beautiful city.
Yeah. And of course, that was the struggle when the youngster actually gained the upper hand in the and
these were Polish.
And it stayed Polish till the end.
To repel the Ukrainians.
The university which I attended.
So you studied in Lviv?
Well, a little bit, not very long. I was called up to the forces and.
Well, let's go back to your story. So then, born in 1913, the late 20s and early 30s, you'd left the gymnasium, I suppose.
Yes.
And you went. What happened to you then? What did you do then?
Well, I was called up from the university. I was called up to.
What did you study at the university? Sorry.
Polish and geography. And of course, in mid, it was also a financial problem. In family, we weren't very well off. Father retired, and so. I was called up to serve to the and actually I served with the, we used to call the Podkorążówka, that's reserve officers course, and
this was like a military service.
Yes, and the number of regiment was 48, 49 was Kolomy, and 48 was Stanislavov then. And I spent a year there. After I finished there, I was engaged. The military wanted me to stay with them.
Can you remember, I didn't stay
as a professional officer, just a contractor, as a contracted officer.
Can you remember the year, what year that was?
Oh, that was the year I finished. This was 35.
35. So
35. Finished the service with the course, the officer's course. That was the year when Marshal Piłsudski died. He died in May 35.
And you, as a what does a contracted officer mean? That sounds a very strange.
Contracted officer. I was engaged to look after the youngsters, young people, and sort of from the military point of view, and preparing them for like I had sort of teams of schools, gymnasium, and other schools there, which we were teaching how to use the arms, how to use, you know, that sort of thing, similar to cadets here.
Okay, so yes, the cadet corps.
Cadet corps, that was more or less.
Was this because there was any feeling of the beginning of the Nazi threat?
Well, we didn't have to have beginning of Nazi threat. We had the threat all our lives. If not Nazi, then the Russians, and that was on all the time. Poland was unfortunately in the place where it was not safe from either side, whether from German or Russian. So we had to get sort of ready, special youngsters and so on. And about 2 or 3 years before the war started, I was made the commanding officer of the region there, in charge of the youth, sort of preparation for military sort of awareness.
And can you talk a little about what kind of training did you give the young people? I mean, was it serious?
Every possible military training. It was the use of arms, the use of carbine, the use of tactics, and everything the same. But of course, it was only an hour a week. Each school had an hour a week, and so on. Even girls were involved. Remember, we had a Ursulanki, so called. We had that lady with us, and we used to do with them as well. So.
And when you say tactics, were they trained in guerrilla tactics, or I mean?
In every possible, very very much like the military sort of, not on that scale though. Scale had to be cut down really, but that was going on. Yes, oh yes, until the almost last moment before the war.
So this was a full-time job for you.
It is. Oh yes, I was paid more than the regular officers, really.
And what was your rank?
I was then second lieutenant.
And you were what, 24, 25?
I was then 20. Well, I started 21 when I was 22 when I finished the course, the military officer course myself.
Which would have been in 35.
I was, as you say, 22, 20, 23, 24, and until 26 when the war started.
So we've got now this, I mean, it's a fascinating time to hear about this time from you, who were actually there, because most people were in Europe, people I've talked to.
There were many.
What was it like actually being between, you know, between the hammer and the anvil, really?
It was not that intense. As my main look, because we are obviously occupied with some other things, girls, and that sort of thing. We had a good life, no question about that, and playing soccer, then skating winter time, and excursions in all sort of places. This was a place where the tourists used to come, and mostly Jews would come, because this part of the world there were quite a lot of Jewish people.
Sorry, I've just got to do something to this. I won't be a second. I've got to switch to another. So there were many, many Jewish people there. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's fine. Was there anti-Semitism at that time?
Jewish people were accepted as people, in fact, with some problems, but not much, really, no. And Unfortunately, they have placed themselves always in the middle of a town, and they would create a sort of place for themselves where the only Jewish. That was probably wrong from that point of view, as it proved to be during the war. You see, that was the wrong. But they were involved mostly in business shops and that sort of thing.
Because historically, anti-Semitism has always been part of, especially in that part of Europe, I suppose.
We had 3.5 million of Jews in Poland. They were a large part of Polish community. And they were mostly business people. There were a lot of doctors, Jewish doctors, a lot of solicitors, and these were the jobs they used to take.
Bourgeois intelligentsia, I suppose.
I remember in Colomea of 8 doctors, there were 5 Jewish doctors. And the same solicitors. There was only 2 Polish solicitors, and the rest was Jewish there.
Did you train them in the military? Did you train Jewish young people?
Well, not very many Jewish. I can't remember Jewish during the war. That I'll probably talk later on. There were some Jewish people in Jewish soldiers in Palestine, especially, but. They were not sort of keen on military services, but they were doing the job that they knew how to do it. That's important, and that's business, really.
So now we move, say, to 1938. Or 1930. You tell me. I mean, when is this sort of the first major incident that makes you realize that it's going to happen?
Well, it's, as you say, it's 1938, actually, when it's probably before that. And even the fact that the Prime Minister then of Great Britain went to see Hitler, and they came back from him producing a document that Hitler had got no intention of starting any war. But a few months later, he started this push, as he probably pushed to Austria. He was Austrian himself. Pushed to Austria and then pushed to Czechoslovakia. So by that push, he changed the possession of the other side of border from Czechoslovakian to Hungarian. They came. We never had a border before with the Hungarian. After the push, we had the Hungarian as neighbors.
Can you remember what the reaction was in your town or your part of Poland to the Neville Chamberlain speech about appeasement? Was there?
Well, there was no reaction among the lower class people and the Hutus. They didn't think about it, but for me, it was a sign. It's all right, the danger is gone. And that probably, I think it's probably even in this country had some influence. Instead of getting ready for the war and starting arm building, you probably relaxed. That was the wrong impression. Well, you didn't, as usual, people believe, all right, he doesn't want the war, who wants the war? So why start to getting worried? But when the push came along, then we knew it's on. Whether Hitler will hit us or not, we still didn't know. We weren't ready, actually, military ready for take on the Hitler's army. But
what was the state of the Polish army, say, in 1938?
The state of the Polish army, we were not ready to war, and Chamberlain helped to keep us down a little bit, probably politically in the Warsaw territory. That might have had some influence on the building up, speeding up the build up of Polish. But we couldn't afford it. We were, don't forget, the past of Poland. We were sort of troubled from all sides, and all the time that the Polish army was not ready for any war of that kind of war,
and the equipment that you had would
the equipment was very ordinary, very sort of similar to what we had during the war number one. Carabines and some artillery, all right, few tanks and few aircraft. But these were not aircraft ready to fight the Messerschmitts and the Stukas and the other lot. They were mostly double
biplanes
things. And no, we were not ready to fight. Although the spirit was all right, well, that was proved in Westerplatte, as you probably know, the attack. Spirit was all right, but there was very little you can do with spirit if you haven't got the arms.
So we are you okay? Are you comfortable, by
no,
the way?
No, yeah. That's okay.
So we've got Neville Chamberlain's famous appeasement speech. Then,
yes,
a few months later, the push begins. What
it did a little bit of damage to the preparation. Same as this country as in our country.
So how did you then begin to realize that things were really going wrong when Hitler occupied Czechoslovakia? Can we just talk through the history of that period? Because it's so... Yes. And how it impacted you? I mean, how you were conscious?
I was involved during the push, actually, to a certain extent. Because being a ski instructor, I was in charge of a skiing course in a place called Lavochne. That was the... part of Carpathian, and the part of Carpathian which was neighboring with the part of Czechoslovakia occupied by the Hungarian. So I met the I met the chief of staff Hungary. He came along, and we had a supper in my hotel where I used to stay. So that was exciting, really. And don't forget, in spite of the fact that they were the friends of Germany, we were very very good terms with Hungarian. One of the Hungarian was a Polish king, Batory. He was elected as Polish king, so we had no problem in that respect. It didn't matter very much. But I remember that very, very, very the push that happened at the time when I was in charge of a skiing course on our side.
So it was a perfectly friendly meeting.
Well, we met actually on the border, and I asked him to come along with us, and he came, one or two, three or four officers with him. And he came along when we had supper, and then he left.
Did you talk about the war? Did you?
No.
You know the expression, the elephant in the room?
No, we didn't talk about the war with him. But I remember there was a tunnel there, and then the border was over the tunnel. And instead of going back the way he came through the woods there, he went through the tunnel back to his side. But that was exciting. It's more about that later on when the war. Well, I met him being prisoner of war, actually. I didn't speak to him, but I saw him in Budapest.
So we're now in 1938. What time approximately? The end of 38, the winter of 38?
Well, that was winter time, actually.
So that would be the winter of 38-39.
That was probably already 39, yes.
The end of 39 or the...
I think that was 39. 38-39 winter time.
Let's go...
Because I remember I returned from the course, skiing course, back to Kosów-Kuzulski, and that was the end of March, I think, when the snow goes and there is no more skiing. But and then was a little bit of commotion about that, that something's cooking up after the push. Of course, it's natural that it will be. So they started a little bit of building up, but that was too late.
Building up of Polish troops on the border,
preparing, and then I was asked to organize a company of national defense company, same as US Dad's Army,
Home Guard, yeah,
but not quite. These were soldiers who had the training, normal army training. But because of health conditions, and then they were so rejected from the first call, and they say, "Well, you've got them, organized them, and trained them, prepared to whatever happened." And indeed, we had as that happened. I should think about 3 months before the war started.
The war started for Poland in
on the 1st of September, 1939.
Just after us, which was, because I think I shouldn't know that date, but anyway, it eluded me now. So that summer, then, that hot summer of 1939.
Very hot summer indeed, and especially September was very, very warm, very hot. And as I say, I was in charge then in the company of national defense, and. When the war started, if we count to that moment, when the war started on the 1st of September, I was told that I'll be called probably to go to the Hungarian border, to replace the regular unit there, company. Okay. And indeed, on the third day, we moved there to a place called Żabie. That was the largest village in Poland, not because it's got so many people, but because it was the area, the people, houses there. You've probably seen it there on the mountains, and all far away from each other. So on the 30th day of the war started, we were told to replace the regular unit there and take over the guarding the border with the Hungary, because there is always suspicion that the German may, having Hungary as friends, may move that way, which would be very, very dangerous. That would cut Poland in half. They would have attacked from the west, but this is the south border. And so we went there, and on the guardhouses, and then my office, my place I was staying was Żabie, and but nothing happened. The other side was absolutely quiet, natural, no movement.
And you were there with your unit of people who were the Home Guard.
That's right.
Polish.
Yes.
What was it called in Polish?
In Polish, it was called Obrona Narodowa.
Okay.
National defense.
I'm just going to do this.